This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, July 5th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. When the police put a drone in the air to surveil an area for days or weeks at a time, your rights are implicated. In Baltimore, a federal appeals court has said the city's persistent aerial surveillance program is unconstitutional. Cato's Matthew Feeney details what that means for other police data grabs going forward.
Police agencies are typically ahead of courts when it comes to technology that may or may not be consequential with respect to constitutional rights, but from the perspective of police, allows them to do their jobs a lot easier. Aerial surveillance is one of them. Baltimore is a city that has adopted it in the wake of Freddie Gray. I know they used a great deal of it for providing data on protests as they were unfolding. What have federal courts now said?
Most recently, the Fourth Circuit heard a case dealing with Baltimore's aerial surveillance program, and they ruled that it violated the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. This is an interesting decision, it seems to me, because the case that the Fourth Circuit relied on actually didn't ostensibly have anything to do with aerial surveillance. The Supreme Court in the past, in a string of cases from the 1980s, did address aerial surveillance. They were looking at cases involving surveillance from airplanes and helicopters, usually associated with marijuana growing. But those weren't the cases that the Fourth Circuit considered. In fact, the Fourth Circuit, in reaching its conclusion that this persistent aerial surveillance was unconstitutional, relied on a more recent case, Carpenter, which we've discussed before. And that was a case where the court ruled that the warrantless access of cell site locator information violated the Fourth Amendment. So here, the Fourth Circuit isn't looking at cases that are associated with the kind of technology we're used to in the past. They relied on Carpenter. And I think it's important to note that in Carpenter, the Supreme Court ruled that a person does not surrender all Fourth Amendment protections by entering into the public sphere. And that's I think, very important because this kind of technology in Baltimore is aerial surveillance for sure, but it is a completely different kind of technology to the aerial surveillance cases we saw in the 1980s. This was a program that used technology originally designed for use in the military. It covered 32 square miles. It was up for days at a time. It could cover 90% of Baltimore. Individuals and vehicles would show up as pixels. But despite the fact you can't identify someone if they look like a pixel, you can see where they go at night, where they wake up in the morning, where they're traveling. And that's an incredible ability to keep a whole city under surveillance. And I'm not surprised that a federal court was looked askance at that.
How relevant is it here? If I recall correctly, in the Carpenter case, one of the complaints was about manpower.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the ability to make use of technology to replace officers working the beat. Mm-hmm. How relevant is that?
I think it's certainly relevant if you're the police officers who rely on this technology. We should be in no doubt that this kind of technology is very helpful to police officers. You can hear the report of a crime, you can look at the data collected from these airplanes, and you can see where the suspects ventured after, where they were beforehand. That's all very valuable. But I don't think you put the Fourth Amendment through a shredder just because a technology makes police's job easier. Certainly, you know, an interesting part of this particular case from the Fourth Circuit is in the dissent, one of the judges is talking about, the importance of policing and how violent Baltimore is. And I think as libertarians, we can all take it as true that policing serve a role in even a limited government, but that because we believe in policing and the investigation of crimes, that doesn't mean that you get to have an aerial panopticon up in the sky to keeping track of law-abiding citizens. Now, the police department did try to get this case chucked as moot because actually the program has been rolled back, but they've retained data related to ongoing investigations. But the plaintiffs here were saying, well, but even though you've only retained data associated with ongoing investigations, the data still includes data related to people completely unrelated to that, mostly residents in Baltimore who decided to step outside on the day of these crimes.
Yeah, it would be one thing if the police had knew about a crime and then collected data. I think it's quite another if they're collecting vast sums of data and then plucking out what they need for ongoing investigations.
Of course. And many people here might jump in and say, well, but Matthew and Caleb, if I'm just going to the grocery store or visiting my mother or going to school and returning home and I'm a peaceful, law-abiding person, why do I care if they're catching murderers using this kind of technology? But the problem here, I think there is one, as our colleague Patrick Eddington, I think, has outlined really well at Cato Big Brother, is the list of groups in American history who have found themselves on the end or on the receiving end of American surveillance is a long but also critically diverse list of people. And I would also say that even if you're not worried about being the target of surveillance, I think there's a good argument that even the knowledge of this kind of surveillance stifles valuable First Amendment protected activity, such as protests against police brutality or religious gatherings or visiting a gun club or things like that.
So the Supreme Court's already ruled in Carpenter. There was another surveillance case that dealt with attaching a tracking device to somebody's car.
Mm-hmm. U.S. v. Jones.
Jones. So those cases seem to add up to the Supreme Court taking a pretty dim view of the wholesale collection of data by police agencies of law-abiding citizens' activity, even if ultimately it does help a criminal investigation.
Mm-hmm. The court seems pretty eager to address new surveillance technologies. But after Carpenter, I think it remains to be seen how technology-specific the court gets. Because the court in Carpenter is pretty clear saying, look, you don't surrender your rights just because you go outside. And there are numerous technologies that can be used to gather information about your public whereabouts. In Carpenter, it was cell site location information. In this case, we're talking about aerial surveillance. Jones dealt with a GPS tracker on a car. At the core, though, of all of these decisions, though, is not what I think a lot of civil libertarians might like, which is a fundamental reassessment of the Fourth Amendment and how it's treated. Here in Carpenter, for example, the court still relied on the so-called Katz test, this emphasis on reasonable expectation of privacy. And we've talked before about that test, and so have some of our other colleagues. It's fundamentally slippery, I would say. And I think the dissenting judges sometimes have a point when they say that these lines are blurry or poorly defined. I remember that there being discussions about how Carpenter, although being applauded by civil libertarians, rested on a pretty specific holding, which is you have a reasonable expectation of privacy to your location being ascertained via cell site location information for about 7 days, right? And this is, I think, a difficult way to do Fourth Amendment analysis. There's also, of course, the decades now old third party doctrine, which hasn't undergone a fundamental reevaluation, and that holds that you surrender expectations of privacy to data you, quote, volunteer to third parties. Congress has improved upon that standard for sure, but certainly it's still good law under U.S. federal jurisprudence.
Yeah, you talk about the third party doctrine, and given that expectation of privacy, however blurry that expectation is in specific circumstances, what are the implications for private technology that people buy to, for example, look out their front door?
This is something more and more people in the privacy sector are talking about. I think you're alluding to these smart doorbells. Yeah, and this is just a wider part of these smart devices that people are bringing into or onto their home. So the doorbell being one of them, but there's also concerns about smart speakers and things like that. The Fourth Amendment is governing the actions of law enforcement, I don't want to make it sound as if private actors can't be creepy and they can't access rather sensitive data or alter behavior in that way. But here, at least at Cato, I find most of the concerns focused on, well, how easy would it be for the cops to access my doorbell video? I think the government would argue, if this ever came before a court, that you knew that you were buying a device from a company, Amazon or Google or whoever, and if it's recorded video related to a crime across the street, then police should be able to access that. The question then is, though, what sort of standard? Should they need a warrant to access it, or is some other standard applicable? But you know, today it's very, very common to talk about surveillance capitalism, and more recently, you've had members of the political right also raising concerns about the surveillance, and most of that I think is couched in a wider concern about so-called big tech. But certainly, I think there is a pan-partisan agreement that there's something pretty creepy about a lot of these private devices, just given how much data they collect.
This has got to be coming back to the court in some form.
I wouldn't be surprised. More and more law enforcement agencies are clearly interested in aerial surveillance, and the emergence of drone technology has only made that kind of surveillance cheaper. Now, some states have taken the step to impose a warrant requirement on drones specifically, but that doesn't mean that drone surveillance won't eventually end up at the Supreme Court. The crucial question, though, is if the court decides to take a aerial surveillance case, is does it continue to use this kind of Carpenter analysis, or does it reassess the aerial surveillance cases from the 1980s? Now, those ultimately, both of these analyses are going to rest on reasonable expectation, and we'll see where the court comes out. But what I think the Fourth Circuit has demonstrated is that you can come to the conclusion that warrantless aerial surveillance runs afoul of the Constitution without having to mention cases that explicitly dealt with helicopters or airplanes or things like that. So for the time being, it seems like Carpenter is the guiding light for emerging technology surveillance cases.
Matthew Feeney directs Cato's Project on Emerging Technologies. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast pretty much anywhere and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.